You and I back together again for a Thursday, November 18th edition of Connecticut Today right here on WICC. We chatted once again with Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb on Governor Ned Lamont's apparent, maybe not backtracking regarding the TCI program and higher gasoline prices. But I also started the show off with some shocking poll numbers from Quinnipiac University regarding the Biden White House and maybe what it all means, especially when we talk about leadership. So are you happy? Is America happy right now? What are you talking about, Paul? Well, you know, we a lot of us grew up and we heard, what did we hear? We heard that old phrase, that old axiom, be careful what you wish for. Remember that? And we've heard it everywhere from the time a lot of us were young kids, up through early adulthood, up through adulthood. Now some of us that are getting a little older, we always hear it, though. And it has different meanings the older you get. And we always heard that. Be careful what you wish for. And then there's the whole thing about anticipation and striving for something, whether it's a job or whether it's that special toy, that wicked great new toy when you were a young guy or young gal growing up or whatever. And what happens in the end, a lot of times, not always, but what happens in the end is that you realize finally getting something is maybe not quite as exciting or as bountiful or as, geez, I don't know, satisfying as actually wanting it. There's something really cool about the anticipation, about striving for something, whatever it is, a cool new toy, a cool new job, that great new, when people were still buying stereos, remember that? Remember those days, boys and girls? Pre-miniaturization, you always wanted that. You always wanted that new set of speakers or that new slick turntable, right? Or that new amplifier, right? And then you got it, right? Whether it was the job or the toy or the ability to go somewhere, and suddenly it became, okay, so what's next now? What's next? We couldn't wait. The anticipation was really what fueled us. Oh, this is going to make things better. In some way, shape, or form, it was all going to make things better because what we're in now, what we were in, it's so bad, whether it's politics or I don't have the cool toy that the kid next door has, or God, I just want that job promotion and everything's going to be great. I'm going to be making more money, better benefits, but yeah, you're also working your tail off more. It's cutting into your social time, whatever. So we want it, and that act of wanting it is like, wow, it fuels us, it drives us. It's the air we breathe for a lot of people. Well, when you apply that to politics, about a year ago, people were like, oh, this is great. This is a new era. Well, you know, what does America feel like now? And what about the people who said, well, we kind of told you so. Hate to tell you, but told you so. More on that coming up straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And FM 1073, 600 AM, FM 1073. If you're up along the 95 corridor from mid-Fairfield County up through a lower New Haven County up into New Haven, the beautiful Elm City, from the Park City of Bridgeport, from the parks, we go to the Elms on 95 North and South. You can pick us up at 1073 FM and then up 91 in New Haven till about the north part of the city, exit 8, exit 9. So crank us up there. Listen to me in beautiful FM in your vehicle. It'll make the drive relaxing, trust me. Every limb on your body will be relaxed and happy. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Ah, yes, wanting something new, the new shiny toy was good. That was going to make your life or your lives just great. Oh, my God, it was going to be wonderful. Well, where do we stand a year now from the election. And I know your people are probably saying, oh, here he goes again. Well, here I go again because I want to go again. And here we go again because it's a point made here. Now, when Donald Trump left office a year ago, and I, you know I'm a numbers guy. I love to look at crosstabs and polling. I'm fascinated with how people think. And that's why I think politics is so hard, whether it's, you know, city council races in Bridgeport or town councils or RTMs, whatever it is in Fairfield County, the Valley, up into New Haven, all over the state. It's interesting to me, and it always has been, because you're trying to sell yourself to people or yourselves as a slate to a group of people. Hey, we're better than that guy or that girl who vote for us. Okay, fine. Now, I know Mr. Trump had a lot of ancillary issues with what he was tweeting, what he was Facebooking, what he was doing on Instagram, all that stuff. So the American people said, okay, we're going to make a change. And remember, everything was going to be great. Oh, my God. America's going to be back. America's going to be great. Now, again, when you look at this, you can't say, oh, no, but the pandemic happened. Because remember, the switch was made, oh, we have to do this for the pandemic because this is going to be so much better. Well, I went back and looked. And the last, let's use the Gallup poll, for instance. Let's not use a media poll or something from a decidedly right-wing or left-wing site. The Gallup poll I found when Donald Trump left office, you know what his approval rating was? Pretty bad. I don't think it was Richard Nixon low, but it was pretty gosh darn low. It was 34%. That's not good. Even I know with my limited capacity, that's pretty low. 34%. 34%. That's like one-third of the country. That's like one out of every three people still likes you. Do the reverse math, which even I can do. Two out of three people, well, they don't like you. And I was like, okay, well, he's gone now, and that's about right. So Mr. Trump left the White House, boarded the chopper and left there, the plane, however he left, at 34%. 34% about a year ago, if we use Gallup, which has been around for decades, 40, 50 years or whatever, George Gallup starting it. So there is a new Quinnipiac University poll out there. Do you know what Joe Biden's favorability is? Mr. Trump had 34% job favorability. In the new Quinnipiac poll, again, hardly a right-wing poll. You know what Joe Biden's is? 36. We've gone from a president who was only liked by or approved by or doing a job well enough to get a 34% approval rating, which at the time, the people in my business and the media said, oh, geez, you know, look at this disaster of a president we got rid of. Okay, you could debate what he was, left or right, up or down. And look how great things were going to be under Joe Biden. And now look, is some of this criticism, do some of these issues fall on the shoulders and the back of Mr. Biden now versus Mr. Trump? I don't know. You could argue either way. But he's at 36. So what has all the anticipation gotten us? All right, we had a guy at 34% who couldn't shut his mouth on Twitter and Facebook, and now we have a guy at doesn't go near Twitter and Facebook, and he's a 36. So is America all that better? Now, there's a crosstab in this poll, too, that I'm going to harp on even more because it plays into precisely what I was talking about over the past couple of weeks. And it's about one word that even a lot of Americans, you got to say from both parties, are saying, we're not getting it. We are not getting it. That word when we come back. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. As we continue at 241, almost 242, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Just another poll out showing how discontented the American people are with everything that's going on. And is it fair that a lot of times, maybe unfairly, maybe fairly, again, is it fair that the numbers reflect on the person, the guy in the big chair, whether it's Republican or Democrat or somebody in the White House. I don't know. You can debate that. We could go for hours and hours and hours. All right. But the bottom line is Mr. Biden in this new Quinnipiac University poll is getting 36% of a job approval. I mean, that's just, I mean, Donald Trump was at 34, and everybody started to say a year ago, well, geez, now we're going to get back to some, geez, there'll be some normalcy now. Oh, man, there's going to be some normalcy now. Well, it's what's changed? Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. What's changed? You tell me, in substantive policy, I don't want to talk about rhetorical stuff. Oh, we're a less hateful country. We love each other again. We're embracing our differences again. Oh, please, stop. Don't hit me with the faculty lounge speech. Okay? What's changed? Nothing. We went through a vicious campaign cycle and a year of whatever's been going on with COVID and the border and this and the other. Nothing has changed. Nothing. Now, I said there was a word that people are yearning for and a word that that people on whichever side of the aisle, they want to see, they want to be able to hook on to. And what was I asking for when I brought up this very topic over the past couple, 3 weeks? What did I say? One word. The L word. Leadership. Leadership. And the current occupant of the White House, Mr. Biden and his administration, you know what their leadership numbers are? Good, bad, approval, disapproval, however you want to phrase it, providing it or not providing it. 37% say there's leadership there. 57% say there isn't. So in a year with the millions and hundreds of millions of dollars spent on the elections on a national front and on a local front, there is that nothing has changed. But what has happened is there is a vacuum of leadership. There is no one using the bully pulpit. And America elected somebody. I know they made a choice. I get that. I understand it. But shame on the Democrats for nominating somebody who they knew, and you can't say they didn't know this, who they knew would be, what word can I use to be kind here, challenged to get through, never mind 4 years or three, is it going to be two? And again, I know there's COVID going on, but my God, I'll ask again, and I'm still waiting for somebody to define it for me, where's the leadership? Where, at a time in this country where we need it on so many fronts, on the economic front, on the racial front, on the immigration front, on the military front, where is the leadership? Where is that person stepping up to the bully pulpit with an FDR moment, with a JFK moment, with a Ronald Reagan moment, or moments, just to quench the thirst of Americans on both sides of the aisle who say, hey, who's in charge here? I mean, we kind of know who's in charge. But, folks, is it just me? Am I the only person wondering this? Is the captain on the bridge? Is the captain on the bridge? Who's got the con? You know, the old conning tower here. Who's steering the ship? Who's at the helm? Is the captain on the bridge? And all we continue to hear is, oh, infrastructure, and this is so great. All right, you did your job. Move on. What in the hell is next? So, we keep getting these weird signals on now as to whether you or I are going to have to pay more for gasoline, maybe as quickly and as shortly, as next year with this thing that we keep calling the Transportation Climate Initiative, the TCI, that is going to hike gas prices. Some people say 5, 10, 15, 20 cents a gallon, whatever. Now, it's on because this was front and center They knew they didn't have the votes for this, so they pull it back. Then COVID hits. Then gas prices go crazy. The governor says the other day, well, no, no tolls. TCI's on the shelf for now. And then he kind of backtracks on it yesterday a little bit. My gut is trying to play both sides here. Chris Herb joins us. He's been out front on this, as have several industry folks. Chris, the head of the CEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Hey, Chris, Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you again?
Good afternoon. Good to be back.
Well, Chris, it looks like the governor's got his tap dance shoes on. He's got his tap shoes on. Little verbal, little tap dance there, Chris. Little, like I like to say, a little verbal twister there. What's going on here?
Actually, you know what? I'll take this as good news. You know, the governor comes out a couple of days ago, basically says that TCI is off the table. The TCI gas tax isn't going to be a part of his agenda. You know, it gets everybody whipped up. And then suddenly he's saying, you know what? If you want it, you do it. And when he says you, the legislature says, well, no, we don't want to do it. You should take the lead on it. So I think this is actually good news. The political theater, the typical political finger pointing is at play here. But if you see through all of it, I think what we have is a governor who has recognized that TCI is not something that he should pursue. We have a legislature that's been telling him for months that they're not willing to move the bill, so they're not willing to do it. So I'm hoping that this is just a matter of them trying to placate the environmental organizations who are leveraging, pressure against them.
And Chris, it's an again, it continues to be almost a soap opera here because, you know, in all the years you've been involved with this and up at the Capitol, I think we talked about this before. It's weird because even some of the not real leftists, but some of the traditional liberals in the state Democratic Party, I mean, even they really don't want this, Chris. People like Martin Looney et al., because they say, as you have said, well, this kind of hits low income people more than rich people.
Yeah, this is the essence of a regressive tax. It has a disproportionate impact on low and middle income families. Back in August, we did a statewide survey of voters. 81% of Democrats think that it's unfair for low and middle income people to have to pay the TCI gasoline tax. So, I mean, when you're getting those kind of numbers, I'm sure that political leadership in Hartford, the majority party, is saying, you know what, even our core constituency is against this, and they're against it for the right reasons, because it hurts people who are just trying to work to earn a living every day.
All right, Chris Herb is the guest. Chris, stand by. Back to you in a moment. When we come back, I want to ask Chris if he has any thoughts on the upcoming energy season. Again, it's not just gasoline, folks, that you get at the pump. It's heating oil. It's natural gas. It's a bunch of stuff. Are you going to be dipping deeper into your pockets? More with Chris coming up first. Traffic and weather together. 3:36 on the sixes at WICC. Yeah, Westport, Weston, Wilton, Fairfield, New Canaan. And again, all the places I'm not allowed. You know, all the cops there, Lower Fairfield County, Gold Coast. They have you listen. Whenever the plate reader sees my plate, I get the flashing lights right in the rear view. Chris Herb's with us. A few more minutes. CEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Hey, Chris, it's officially cold now. These prices, everybody's talking about the prices, Chris, at the gas pump. And you and I talked about this today. Now the government is launching. We talked about it the other day, by the way, per se. There's a investigation that's going to be launched now, and the White House going after the oil companies. Are you hearing anything different, Chris, regarding prices and what people should do now with their propane, their natural gas, their kerosene, their heating oil? Is it still looking to be a real expensive few months ahead?
Well, first of all, I'll say that investigations aren't going to change prices.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is a function of fundamental supply and demand. This is a function of very bad federal energy policy that's restricted United States production of energy. So, you know, that's what's driving prices. So they can look into it as much as you want. The president can, you know, pound his fist, but it's not going to change what we pay. And unfortunately, that's a lot more than what we experienced last winter at the pump and for home heating. I don't see, unfortunately, any relief coming anytime soon because of those two reasons. The president's not going to change his mind about XL pipeline. The president's not going to change his mind about the moratorium he's placed on extraction of energy. That's not going to change anytime soon. When he went to OPEC and said, produce more oil because we need prices to go down. OPEC's response was literally, no, you do it. So he made a bad decision, and now we're once again at the beck and call of OPEC and foreign nations that aren't really big fans of ours.
See, Chris, it's interesting because whenever I have, not just you, but I've had three or four people on the show on a regular basis on this, I invariably, Chris, and you probably hear this yourself, you've been doing this a while, I invariably get the comments online and in my email, all those oil and gas company guys, they're just, I was chided the other day for Chris for having somebody on who sounded like a lobbyist for the oil companies. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say that, listen, at the end of the day, the price is actually established on Wall Street, right? These are traders looking at all sorts of geopolitical factors that end up being the price. Frankly, Paul, here's the truth of the matter, back to what you're paying at the pump. Right now, we're paying 66 cents a gallon at the pump. The guy that you're buying that from on the street, he's not making 66 cents a gallon. He's not even making a third of that. So the truth of the matter is that if you want to look at if there's anyone who's making money off of this, it's, you know, 25-year-old Wharton graduates who are on Wall Street that are trading paper and could care less about someone who has to fill up on Main Street.
So you're saying, Chris, just so people understand it, that the price in part is established by these guys and gals, these traders who, again, look at policies from the government and say, well, if they're kind of anti this or leaning toward this, I'm going to buy X and X or do this for my clients or myself, whatever their fiduciary responsibility is, because here's where we think it's going because of all these pressures.
That's exactly where it starts. It starts on Wall Street's perception of the value of that product, not the actual value, what it takes to extract it, to refine it, to ship it. It's their perceived perception. So when OPEC says we're not going to produce more oil, when the president institutes policies that says we're not going to have more production of oil in the United States, which only a year and a half ago we were a net exporter and now we're importing again because of federal energy policy, then traders push the price up. My guys, family-owned businesses, I don't represent ExxonMobil. Mm-hmm. I don't represent BP. I represent Main Street, Bridgeport, and Waterbury, and Hartford. Those guys end up paying for what those traders believe that price is, and then drop on top of it 66 cents of state and federal taxes.
Chris Herb, thank you. Appreciate it. Check him out, folks, online, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris, continue to fight the good fight. Have a happy Thanksgiving if we don't talk, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Paul, enjoy.
Appreciate it. All right, folks, there you go. Interesting there that Chris pointed out, because I did get a couple of emails the other day saying, hey, you know, these people you have on that constantly criticize OPEC, I'm sorry, don't criticize OPEC, but go after the White House, go after Biden and the pipelines, you know, they sound like lobbyists for the oil companies. Now, I wanted to ask Chris that, and there you hear it. What happens is, yes, the price you and I pay at the pump is in fact set and based on some political realities, both in the present moment and in the future. What's going to happen? You know, traders, you know, oil futures, you hear about that on the stock reports here we have on WICC, the price of a gallon of crude oil, they say the mark you have to look for once it gets above $75, that's when it gets a little testy for you and I. But again, part of those prices are set by, yes, what is happening in a White House at any particular time.